with Dr. Pam Peek.
Well, hello there. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 564 of the Bold and Brave Her podcast. And today I'm joined by a wonderful friend and colleague who has a body story. You know what I call this? Let's see if I can say it right. She's on a bodicey, right? Get odyssey, bodicey. Oh, come on. You love it. Rebecca, this is awesome. So Rebecca Rotstein is an expert in all things taking care of your body, especially your bones. So she's the founder of Buff Bones Exercise Method for Bone and Joint Health with virtual coaching, online programming, trained instructors in more than 30 countries. And she's also an industry leader with a background in Pilates. Align that body. Every time I hear Pilates, I just have to stand tall. Personal training, dance, and sports medicine. And she's, I'm not going to tell you more about her story. I want her to do that. And that's all about her body and what's happened over the course of decades, actually, in her life. Because, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of us as women look at our bodies and try to, you know, look at the person next to you and say, oh, you know, I'll take their journey, or I'll just sort of be inspired by where they're coming from. And the answer is no, that's a hard no. You have to do this by examining yourself and making certain that you are honoring every single twist and turn in life and twist and turns in our body, and realize that you have to pay attention to you and stop looking at everybody else. Really, really important. All right. So Rebecca, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh my gosh. So when you first told me your story, I thought it would be so incredible for women out there to hear how you evolved over time. Now you did ballet, right?
Correct.
And did you do it at a high level?
A very high level. I left high school to dance at North Carolina School of the Arts. So I left home to move cross country to dance in high school.
Okay. And then what happened with the ballet thing?
And I was planning to dance professionally, and I ended up quitting with injuries. I thought that I would just never deal with the body again. And that lasted a brief period of time. But those injuries and that experience as a lifelong mover, because actually I got into ballet because I was a competitive ice skater. I was a state championship ice skater.
So you were a state championship ice skater. All right. And I take it even before that, you were just hanging out of trees and just being totally physically active, right?
Well, actually, I had skates on at age 3. So pretty much after I could walk was when I started skating. So when I say I'm a lifelong mover, I mean, movement literally has been, and athleticism to some degree has been part of my life since just after I could walk.
So you did ice skating and then you ended up in ballet.
Yes, because, and I assume it's still the case, but certainly at that time in the 80s, for competitive ice skating, it required grace, and it required that element of ballet, because that artistry was a very high component, along with the athletic aspects of jumping and spinning.
Okay. So then we did the ballet thing. Then, you know, wiping shock off face, you ended up with, you know, a mountain of injuries. And then what did you do in terms of just, you know, physical activity and all of that?
Well, I quit and I went to college. And when I was at college, I worked in the sports medicine department. So I worked in the training room, which is athletic training is basically physical therapy for athletes. So I was still involved in that way, and I was planning to go to physical therapy school. What did I do for my own body at that time? You know, I would try running. I And soon after that, actually, I started lifting weights very casually, not really knowing per se what I was doing, but I still would try to be active. And then actually soon after that was when I was introduced to Pilates as a rehabilitation method for my injuries. And that made everything click for me in my body and mentally, because there was an element of full body experience that reminded me of dance. I think that's why Pilates often has been attractive to many dancers. But also there was an ability for me to have control over my body that I had really lost. And also it took me out of pain. I mean, that was a big key part. So that's kind of the history of what I did, and then also how I even got into Pilates in the first place.
So then did you become an instructor? I mean, did you go through the whole thing?
I did. I was doing it as a patient in physical therapy and then became a client as I segued out of physical therapy for a number of years. And then, yes, I went through a rigorous training program, became a certified instructor. And then I shortly thereafter joined the faculty of a major training center in New York City where I lived at the time. After college, I moved to New York City. I should give that background. And yes, that's really where I made my career. It started out in the Pilates realm. And that's what also gave me also many opportunities to travel around the world and train other exercise professionals and to present at conferences and such.
So did you become a physical therapist?
I did not. And that's okay. The irony is that I had decided not to go to physical therapy school because I didn't want to do anything with the body ever again.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Now, what did you mean by that? You never wanted to do anything with the body again?
There was a grieving process as I quit dancing. It was my entire identity. When you're at that level of whether it's professional or pre-professional, you live and breathe this. And all of a sudden when it's curtailed, you know, I was 18 and I had what's essentially a midlife crisis. I didn't know who I was anymore without this. So I had decided that I would work in the sports medicine area of my college, thinking I'd go to physical therapy school, but soon decided after that I just needed to completely move away from anything that dealt with the body because it just felt painful emotionally. And it was in some ways an interesting precursor to another kind of grieving process I had a number of years later when I was diagnosed with osteoporosis. That same,
which we'll get to in a second. So the reason why I brought this whole thing up is because you're so open and articulate about how you were dealing with your body. So many women don't want to have to deal with their body. Or they have kind of, you know, interesting delusions about what their body is and what it can do and all of that. And I just found it fascinating that, you know, you were really going through these points where you were so tied up in your body. I mean, I did San Francisco Ballet Academy, so I feel your pain. But I certainly didn't take it to your level. I was just, you know, I'm doing it because it was, you know, how shall I say the word? Should I say enjoyable? I really love doing it. I certainly had no intention of doing this as a career. It was just something that I knew I needed to do to get the grace and elegance and all the wonderful things you get out of ballet class and the alignment and posture and all that. And some pretty good muscles too. But, you know, women, I think, fall in and out of love with their body. And, you know, for you, movement was huge. You know, movement was you. And when you couldn't do it.
Exactly. The absence of that is just you don't know who you are. And so, yes, there's that interesting connection with your body that I think I've gone through a number of cycles with this throughout my, I guess, 50 years now, where your identity and your relationship with your body changes at different points in life. And I think mine just went through a couple extra of those stages because of that dance and athletic background. But you're right, there's these shifts that we go through and how we see ourselves, how we feel about ourselves, and how we move within this vessel.
So many women are not connected with their body in a very healthy way. They sort of flagellate it and flog it. what I'm into is just listening to your body. It, you know, I know that sounds like earthy crunchy and I should, you know, offer you a cup of granola right about now, but I'm here to tell you, after having lived in my body for many decades, that the body speaks to you. There's actually a word for it. It's called interoception. People who are, yes, there you go. You know, people who are very tied into their bodies, you know, athletes in general, and know where every square inch of your body is located at any point in time. We also know, you know, where pain happens, where it shouldn't happen, when to draw back, when to rein it in. We have all kinds of interesting things going on with our body. But one of the things I notice is that a lot of women don't have a healthy relationship with their body. You should wake up. I don't care how old you are out there in the Her podcast land. But when you wake up in the morning, one of your first gratitudes, outside of saying you love all your family and friends, is that your body still works and that it is such a blessing to you because it's going to be able to take you amazing places. And heads up, girlfriends, as you get older, as you continue to age, because you're aging right now, I don't care if you're 19 out there or if you're, you know, 69, it doesn't matter. You're aging. We all are. Okay. That your body is going to continue to go through wild and crazy twists and turns in life. And when that occurs, you have to do what I love to call, you saw that in all my books, A squaring it, adapt and adjust. Just like move like a fantastic athlete. I always think of tennis players, you know, who are just constantly, you know, doing micro adjustments or waiting for that ball. Which way is it going to, whatever. You're adapting and adjusting. You know, it is not the strongest who survive. It is not the smartest who survive. It is those who can adapt who survive.
I have to just commend you. You are one of the only physicians that I've known who is aware of and versed in interoception. And it is so important. And also that adaptability is the key to everything. And this is what I wish more people understood and also appreciated. You're really tapping into a love of mine, which is about somatics. And that appreciation of your body and embodiment and understanding that pushing it is important, but as you said, like flagellation is not really the answer. How can we listen to it and how can we be respectful? Because that's where the intuition also comes into play.
Exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. And that's something I love for women to really explore. This is one of the reasons why Pilates, yoga, and a number of other movements really help teach you the pieces of your body. You know, so when you're doing downward dog, you know, where's your little behind anyway? It's like flying up there in the air. You know, can you actually reach down on the floor? Well, that's because you have great core, back, flexibility. Your hip hinging, you're doing all kinds of interesting things. And just being aware of all that is kind of extraordinary. And you will never fully appreciate it until something happens to your body.
100%.
Does that make sense to you, Rebecca?
Oh, you're so spot on. And I think this is also where any kind of diagnosis that comes into play can be better dealt with. When we come from that recognition of, oh, well, what's happening? What else is happening in with my body? Or as you pointed out, what are all the other things that are going well with my body? Because the fact that I'm living and breathing, and if you think of physiologically, all the insane number of actions that are happening on a every second to allow you to function, there are so many things that are actually going right, as opposed to one perhaps thing or several different things that are not going well within it.
Well, but here's the thing. Girlfriends out there, bank your body. Bank your muscles. Because, honey, after the age of 50, especially, you're going to need it. Because suddenly, you know, if you have a good, strong core, and we're going to get into how to do all that, but if you have a good, strong core of muscle, flexibility, and balance, then when something goes awry, and honey, it's going to, guaranteed. I have crossed the Rubicon, I'm telling you, from over here, something's going to happen to you. And whether it's just, you know, arthritis finally did a number on your knee, or, you know, your hips kind of doing a little something, something, or your back, or, you know, just name that body part. I always love to call it an organ recital. Okay, let's see what works today. Is the heart working? The lungs are working? Okay, so you need to plan now. I don't care if you're 20, 30, 40, now. Right now. And if you're already 60, fine. That's a perfect time to start. Some of the best athletes I've ever seen in the Senior Olympics, where I'm on the board, started when they were 60 years old. They just had this little awakening one day, more like a 2x4 to their head, like, hey, you know, I could be good at this. And then suddenly there they are. So the body is ridiculously forgiving, right? Up to a point. So bank your body now, because as you're going to hear in a moment now, Rebecca's now going to tell you that here she is, she's doing Pilates, she's an instructor and all the other stuff. Then what happened? We had the diagnosis.
That's very on spot. So I was training others to be Pilates instructors at one point when I was in my late 20s, I was 28. And I also taught the what's known as special populations curriculum, the injuries and conditions because of that background that I'd had in the sports medicine area. And so I taught about osteoporosis, among other things, but on a very basic level. So I was taking some additional curriculum and learned at the time how you build a majority of your bone density by the time you're 18 to 20. And some light bulbs started going off in my head, knowing, okay, well, actually, I had stopped menstruating. I'd barely menstruated, actually, as a teenager, and then stopped.
And that's because of the ballet training.
Yes, because this is very common. And now we know this, and there's a lot more prevention and intervention that goes on. But at the time, it was not unusual just as a ballet dancer to stop getting your period. And it could be for a variety of reasons, from eating disorders to simply not getting the caloric intake that you would need to match how much exercise you're doing. And that was the second part, was what my situation was. And now we know of this as REDS, relative energy deficiency in sport. At the time, the name didn't exist and we didn't talk about it. So this is now flagged with athletes, with dancers, ensuring that you don't stop menstruating, because that can have deleterious effects down the road and even at the time on your bones. So I knew that, wait, I probably would be at risk because of that. I also knew that osteoporosis ran in my family. Both my parents had it. I'm small boned on top of this. And I thought, let me get a baseline. Just a baseline DEXA, which is your gold standard for screening, testing, diagnostics of osteoporosis. And I thought I was just going to get a baseline for later in life. And then it came back being told, you have osteoporosis. So that was like the screeching halt of the brakes that you hear in the sound effects for my life at that moment, where I had to pause. And yet again, just like years earlier, had that moment of reevaluation of everything.
Once you got the diagnosis of osteoporosis, did you even know what it was?
Yes, because I mean, I taught the basics of the pathology, but I didn't understand personally what that really felt like. And all of a sudden, I understood what most, you know, many seniors and at that point, some midlife women also were talking about, that experience of fear and frustration and overwhelm. And, you know, I even had the benefit of colleagues that were health professionals that I could tap into. And still, it was very scary.
Okay. And so you did a lot of homework, more homework, you know, basically saying, okay, so I've got osteoporosis. Now,
I did a lot of homework. I sought out healthcare professionals to help, including a top endocrinologist in New York City, so that I could really get to the root of it, because obviously it's not typical to be diagnosed at such a young age, which also was part of the other challenge. You know, I was a young woman of childbearing age. I didn't know what medications would do. They hadn't been, went from my research that I was exploring, they hadn't been tested on people of the population of my age. And I also wanted to understand more, well, is there something else that's causing this? I wanted to get at the underlying root cause. And that's why I sought out the medical help, so that I wasn't just trying to do a guessing game, but I could really find out, is there anything else that is going on metabolically in my body that could be leading to this?
So you had all that checked out?
Yes.
Okay. And what did you do? You know, what did you find out and what did you do with that?
Well, I found out, fortunately, that there was no other underlying cause. You know, all the tests were normal, blood work, bone turnover markers, various hormone testing, etc. And really the one thing, the only thing, was that I had a vitamin D deficiency, which now everybody's very familiar with this discussion, but in what, 2004, this wasn't something that was publicly talked about much. And so what I did was I remineralized with vitamin D, and I cleaned up my diet, started working on my nutrition, and also started strength training, because that is something that, as I mentioned, I'd done a little bit casually, but I did it formally. I sought out a trainer who could help me with this specifically, so that I wasn't just trying to piece things together on my own.
So wait a minute, you didn't mention something when you saw all the fancy schmancy endocrinologists and whatever. Didn't they offer you drugs?
They did. And so I was offered bisphosphonates, which the endocrinologist recommended against, in fact. He said, you're not having bone loss. And that's the purpose of, and we won't get into the whole classifications and categories of osteoporosis medications, but the oldest classification and the one that was most widely used at that time halted bone loss. But that wasn't the problem. It was very clear from some of the testing that I wasn't actually experiencing bone loss. And so throwing that medication at me was, according to the endocrinologist, was not the answer, not the solution. So he did not recommend that I take medications. And of course, just continued monitoring throughout my life. But then what were the lifestyle interventions that I could do? And so I chose, again, coming as a mover, how can I engage in appropriate strength training to make a difference?
So let me go back for a second. You're a little person. You're what, 5 feet tall?
I'm 5 feet and I usually hover a little under 100 pounds.
Okay. So like I said, you're a little person, and I'm not at 5'9". So at 5 feet tall, it's an interesting thing. Smart endocrinologists will realize that all of the standards that are set up were never meant for small people, small boned, petite, and shorter than average. If you're looking at like a 5'4"-ish average, all those numbers are meant for those people. So where are you? Who knows? But it doesn't really pertain in a big way to you. So when we're really looking at peak bone mass and when we're trying to read DEXAs, you know, the bone scans, it's a challenge with small people. And so, right? Does that make sense?
Yes. Spot on. And that is also something that the endocrinologist pointed out to me. And that was the first I'd ever heard about how essentially as a petite, small boned woman, you are actually already at a disadvantage when it comes to bone density in the sense that you have less bone mass than somebody who's larger. And so he did highlight that to me. And that's something we've also tried to share with people throughout the years as well. We meaning with my company. But to highlight, yes, that it may not necessarily be that you have weak bones, but when you take a twig versus a thicker stick and you look at the mass, one is going to actually have less mass. Now, is it more predisposed to breaking? Maybe not necessarily, but that does have to be taken into consideration, what you're pointing out. And so, yes, A, that, and also there, without getting too technical, there's the T-score and the Z-score. And for somebody of that age that I was at, really what should have been looked at is a Z-score, because that's where it's going to be age-matched to somebody who's also a young individual, as opposed to comparing your, as opposed to a T-score, which is really used more for around the time of menopause and afterwards.
Right. So it's not age appropriate for someone who's 28, who's small boned and petite. All right. Now, when we come back, we're going to find out how Buff Bones was born. If you've ever picked up a product and thought, I have no idea what half of these ingredients are, this one's for you. SkinSafe is an app developed by Mayo Clinic that takes the guesswork out of shopping for skincare and personal care products. It uses decades of clinical research to analyze ingredients and match products to your unique skin profile, so you always know exactly what's safe for you. Whether you have sensitive skin, allergies, or just want to be more intentional about what you put on your body, SkinSafe makes it simple. Download the app for free and use the link in the description to get 20% off a SkinSafe premium membership. And we're back. All right. So, Rebecca, here you are with the osteoporosis. You've chosen, thank you, to utilize my favorite, which is strength training, to be able to address the issue. And you were smart enough to do due diligence and realize that you really are an outlier as a small, petite humanoid. And so because of that, you know, you had to think for yourself and hopefully get a terrific A team of medical providers around you who understood what was really going on. So when did Buff Bones, when did you come up with this whole concept of putting together a program and a company around this whole issue?
It was probably a few years later. So initially after that, I was working on myself. But within that year, I started looking at research to see what's the story here with all of this. And I also started, within about a year or so, I created a workshop. And I started creating some workshops that were just for the public to help educate them with what I'd learned. And then also for exercise professionals, a lot of whom were Pilates from that background that I'd had at the time. And then within a few years, there was request for more. So there was request for more direction, more guidance. And that's really how Buff Bones came about. I wanted a name that didn't have osteoporosis in it, because then and still now it conjures a lot of fear. And it deters people. And I wanted something that would be empowering, because that is the biggest part that I found personally was stripped. There's no other diagnosis that comes to mind for me, at least, where the actual physiological action and discussion or description matches the emotional experience. You're told your bones are crumbling or your bones are frail. All of a sudden you feel that. And going back to that discussion before of more mindset, it's very disempowering. It's very disheartening. And so I wanted something that could basically turn that upside down and help reclaim your sense of self and how you identify with your body. So Buff came up with Buff Bones. So it was within a couple years, and looking at all the literature, I had to also, along those lines, I was invited by Hatherley Medical Education, that I don't know if it still exists, but in the O's, that was big for physicians like yourself to get their continuing medical, your CMEs, your education credits and such. They were starting a branch at the time that was for exercise. So they asked me to write a paper, and I do a whole lit review for this, on exercise and osteoporosis. And that's really what became the genesis of how I really saw everything that was out there to understand what has been researched, what is being advocated on a deeper level.
Okay. So then you put together Buff Bones. Now, let me go back to your journey. When you started strength training, did you notice any change in your bone scans over time?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I moved, I have to look back exactly the length of time, but I moved from osteoporosis to osteopenia. I mean,
okay, osteopenia means that, you know, you have some loss of bone mineral density, again, per norms, right? But you haven't lost enough bone mineral density to actually cross over to osteoporosis, which is more severe. So now you are able to pull a Yui, come back into just low bone density, which is fine. And during this entire time, have you fractured at all?
Thankfully, no. And I
okay,
that way.
No fracture. No fracture. You were able to turn it around. I want people out there to listen to this. Strength training is extremely, you know, therapeutic when it comes to your bones. Of course, it really depends upon where you are on that bone journey. But regardless, everyone could get some level of benefit, whether you already have osteoporosis or, you know, osteopenia, or quite frankly, you're looking to prevent or slow down the bone mineral density loss. Look, let's get real here. Bone mineral density peaks for average individuals, and this is women, right around the age of 30. So that's plus or minus, you know, some people 28, some people 32, whatever. But right around the age of 30. And then I don't care who you are, you will be dropping some level of bone mineral density. But you can mitigate how fast that loss is going to take place, that, as it were, slope of the curve, by doing strength training, which is so terribly important. And as well, you know, stimulating your bones with physical activity per se, whether you're a runner, you know, a jogger, jumping up and down, you're a brisk walker, hiker, all those things are fantastic because they're weight bearing and gravity's your friend. Just ask any astronaut whose bones melt when they go up in space. So, you know, you can actually slow it down, but you can never stop it per se. You know, something is going to be happening, even at a very small level, all throughout the rest of your life. And the big time, and this is why I said, bank your body right at the time of menopause, which is around the age of, you know, anywhere from 50 to 52-ish, right around that time. When your sex hormones drop, you know, they take a big drop, then what ends up happening is you drop a lot of bone mineral density, a lot. And so again, you can mitigate a lot of that by already being on top of the program. And that means that when you hit menopause, you're not already like literally perched on the edge of osteoporosis, and that you've got, you know, enough bone to work with now. So that's just the reality of being a woman and her bones. But Rebecca's story is really remarkable for the fact that she used strength training in a petite, small-boned body that had already been formally diagnosed with osteoporosis, even though the norms are different for small people. And so she was able to turn that around. And have you kind of maintained that for the time being?
I have, you know, I think the other one thing I want to clarify is that there is an advantage when you have a lot more estrogen in your system, as I did. And so it is harder to make changes as estrogen declines. But yes, I've been able to, again, stay out of the osteoporosis range, and I hope to be able to do that. But I also knew very clearly that I was going to be at greater risk around the time I am now at 50 because, again, of that estrogen decline. And it's also interesting seeing how there's been more discussion about that time of perimenopause than there even used to be, because the data analysis has even shown that within that 1 year prior to the final menstrual period is when there's really rapid bone loss. It's not even after menopause. It's actually just before. There was something presented at the recent the Interdisciplinary Symposium on Osteoporosis just 2 months ago, where you and I actually met last year, that was pointing out about this critical period that, if I remember it correctly, it was that entering menopause, even with osteopenia, just borderline right there, will lead, without any other kind of intervention, will decline to the level of osteoporosis by the time, I think it was 65.
That's exactly correct. So to clarify, by the time you hit menopause, let's define menopause, 12 consecutive months of no menstrual cycle. Well, 12 months ago is when everything disappeared. Otherwise, you'd have a menstrual cycle. So, or it didn't necessarily disappear. It just fell to such low levels and your ovaries were done secreting these sex hormones at a higher level. So you, to your point, you were already experiencing a dip at that time, and then menopause hits 12 months later, and then it just basically, you know, continues. I should, you know, say that one of the current algorithms that menopause certified providers are now using is to actually introduce the concept of getting a woman on estrogen, you know, even in perimenopause based upon her symptoms. You know, I think that that is extremely important. Estrogen is an absolutely powerful bone builder. And so more and more women are demanding estrogen patches and get them on board as soon as possible. They say that the window is a 10-year window from the time that you hit menopause. So if you hit menopause at 52, then you're up to 62. What happens beyond that is still, you know, being debated. People are trying to figure out, like, you know, if you're 65, you know, would that be appropriate? Here's the answer. You sit down with a menopause certified provider, and you could find any of these providers by going to the Menopause Society's website, because all you have to do is enter your zip code and then they'll tell you where you can find one of these highly trained providers. They could be GYNs, it could be endocrinologists, it could be family practitioners, internal medicine. They come from all kinds of interesting backgrounds. A lot of gynecologists are doing this now. So that being said, to your point, estrogen can still be on board if you are a good candidate for that. And your provider has to be able to look at your personal family history and figure out what's going on. Right.
And I'm happy to be very transparent. I knew for a while that I'd probably do that. And I've been on estradiol, obviously, as well as progesterone, which for those who are not aware.
Well, that's because you still have a uterus.
Exactly.
Yeah. So for all of us who do not, we just have the estrogen patch. And I've been wearing that for many years. Always ahead of the curve. But that being said, I'm just really happy to see that there's yet something else we can do that's actually quite natural if you have the appropriate provider, they'll watch you over time and help monitor, because, you know, women are, you know, moving targets. You know, this is a dynamic process. It's not like, okay, I've arrived, bye. No, it's more like your body is going to continue to do some wild and crazy things all the way through the menopause transition and then into postmenopause. So you need a really good A team, and you have to do some homework. When women roll their eyes, go, homework, yeah. What do you do when you want a good hairstylist? Now, come on, girlfriends. You know, you go through 35 people. You're doing like intense vetting, and you're asking acid questions. Well, hello, this is your health. And you got to do exactly the same thing to find the appropriate menopause certified provider for you. All right. So make sure to do your homework and get someone like that. And, you know, the reason why I'm saying that, and instead of just saying, just go to your GYN. The reason why is a lot of GYNs are not yet trained in this. And I am shocked. I mean, I think it's only like 20%. Hopefully that number is increasing. You know, we have the Menopause Society meeting coming up in October, another several months. So let's get some new numbers here. But I hope more and more and more, especially in medical school and during the training years per se, they're talking more and more about this and staying up to date on menopause science in a big way. So I love that. Now, you've been lifting weights. You know, all right, let's do it. Let's do the gun show. All right, you put your arm up. Here we go. Let me see. There you are. Look at this, this little person. I'm going to put mine up. Okay, we got our little guns here. It's the two gun salute. And why are we doing that? Not to be little nasty people and showing off, but we're doing that to say we're women and we have the guns to show for it. Okay. And that means that there's a wonderful payoff that will save your life one day. I guarantee you it will save your life. Having a body that's well prepared to be able to do what you want it to, especially when you're working around maybe some short-term or even chronic impairments, because it's going to happen. It's the wear and tear of life, and that's where it is. So tell us all what Buff Bones does, and if someone went to the website, tell us the website so we understand that. And who's it for? Who shows up at your doorstep?
Well, the website is buff-bones.com. Who is this for? It's, you know, we really have our primary focus on midlife women. I created it for that when the term didn't exist. So, you know, 2009 was formally when it started. And I would describe people who are not baby boomers, but also who are not, you know, young 20-somethings. We didn't really have the terminology we have now. And so it was those women who I'm now part of this population, I wasn't at the time, who were really overlooked. And that's the history of it, is that there was a disservice to women in this point in life where they're capable of so much more than just doing seated exercises, lifting their arms up overhead as a senior was often considered. And I should give a shout out to my 80-year-old mother who weight trains, who can outplank most people. So, you know, there's a difference now of having what we consider with chronological age, but also at a different point in life than what a 25-year-old might be seeking and might even be capable of with certain things going on with joint pain or other issues they might have in their bodies. And so I wanted to speak to that population, which again, ironically, I'm now part of. So what we do is we help midlife women with osteoporosis or osteopenia, low bone mass, to get strong, to be resilient, to move well, because also there's elements of mobility that we haven't talked about as well. There's elements of balance, agility, power output, various things, body organization and motor control, which really is the basis before you even start adding in loads. For instance, if your joints are limited in range of motion, or you have different compensations that you do when you try and lift your arm up overhead, and then you want to start adding weight, that's how the joints can actually become impaired. Or you could get a rotator cuff tear because you're not really moving the joint appropriately. That has to really be looked at before we start adding in loads, or bigger loads, I should even say. So we look at it from a really comprehensive approach. And then, of course, you know, there's elements of muscle mass that we're talking about, and strength, certainly muscle strength, but really a very comprehensive approach, and then providing education as well. And this is what we do in our virtual coaching specifically, so that people also understand what are tests, what are screens, what are diagnostic tools that are out there, what are these medications, what do they do, what do they not do, so that you can better advocate for yourself when you meet with your healthcare professional, and are not just sort of caught in the headlights of confusion and overwhelm. And you can really reclaim your own identity, your power, your voice, and move well and adapt in the way that you were talking about. Because yeah, life is going to throw things at you. You know, there's going to be other things, or injuries or conditions or tears that happen in your body, because life happens. How do you work through that? And how do you continue to move forward, even when you might be temporarily sidelined by something?
The more fit you are mentally and physically, the better you're going to stay resilient. That's the rule. So I don't care what your age is right now. It's never, ever, ever, ever too late. Rebecca's living proof of having gone through, you know, quite a bodicey, you know, over the years, of everything from joy to grief to joy to grief, and constantly adapting, listening to her body, more of that interoception, and finding a way, navigating. What's the workaround? And that's what our job is in life, isn't it? You know, when stuff happens to us, it's those people who can figure out that workaround quick enough, you know, who are those who can survive and thrive. I don't care about just survival. I want thriving. You know, thriving is where it's at. So, you know, yes, you have to be realistic about the fact that there are going to be certain things in life you can no longer do because of X, Y, and Z. Okay. Work around it. What else can you do? Always stay in the positive, because it's that four-letter word, hope. People thrive on hope. And that's why, you know, when I saw the title of the company, Buff Bones, I loved that. Immediately, you know, women can imagine, you know, their little bones being all tough and little biceps muscles on every single bone. And, you know, it's a great visual. So it's a, you know, kudos to you for coming up with such a great title for the company, and also for you being such an inspiration and motivation to all of your teachers that you're teaching, as well as just regular clients. Tell everyone how they can get a hold of your company and engage with you.
So you can, for one thing, you can find us on Instagram. The handle is @gotbuffbones. Our Gen X generation remembers the Got Milk campaign. And then our website again, buff-bones.com is how you can reach out to us for more information and see if we can help you. We also, you know, try to provide free public information as well, whether it's, again, educational through our Instagram or through webinars that we offer. You know, we are educators at heart. And I think that's a key thing, is that education is the forefront for us, pedagogy, education. And we want people to understand not just what to do with their bodies, but how their bodies operate. Because when you come from that point of view, you actually appreciate it more. And it goes full circle to what you said at the beginning with interoception and hope. And you come from a place of curiosity. And I think that really deserves more recognition for all of us.
Fantastic. What a beautiful way to end this. Rebecca Rothstein, I can't begin to thank you enough. Everyone, the group is Buff Bones, right? You can learn more about that through the websites and Instagram that Rebecca just shared. Rebecca, you will now be a repeat offender, meaning that we will have you back again and again, because we are very hungry for that education. So thank you, Rebecca.
Thanks so much for inviting me to be here. It's been wonderful talking with you.
All right. And I also want to thank my wonderful sponsor, and that is Stop Guessing What's Safe for Your Skin. It is Skin Safe. This is a fantastic app that was developed by Mayo Clinic. It uses real clinical research to analyze ingredients and build a personalized safety profile just for you. Whether you're managing a skin condition or just want full transparency in what you buy, Skin Safe takes the guesswork out of every purchase. Download the app for free today and use the exclusive link in the ad that comes with this wonderful podcast to get 20% off Skin Safe Premium, because knowing what's safe for your skin shouldn't cost you full price. Oh my goodness. All right. Oh my goodness. This has just been a fantastic podcast. So I want all of you to leave us a review, because we love to hear from you. Now, this has been a production of Podcast Health. Ah, what a fantastic production team it is. And I got a little something for you. I love Emily Dickinson. I don't know about you, but she wrote something once that I really love. And as a physician, it kind of hits home. And Rebecca, especially since you're also in the healing arts, if I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain. If I can ease one life, the aching, or cool one pain, or help one fainting robin unto his nest again, I shall not live in vain. I love that. What a great way to end that. So, all right, everyone, go on out there. Carpe diem, seize the day. And thanks for listening.